Welcome, David.
Thank you.
Very fortunate today to have David Meline, CFO of 3M. He's been with the company since 2008 and has a wealth of experience at GM as well. So, David, thank you for joining us today. We're really looking forward to the discussion.
Good.
So just kicking things off, the one area where you guys have really surprised to the upside, from our perspective this year, has really been on the growth side. You compare 3M to our coverage, and you guys are growing about 3.5% so far year to date. Our coverage organic growth has been closer to 1.5%. So, why don't we just start with the secret sauce? Why have you guys been outgrowing the market so much?
Yeah, so if you look at our performance this year in terms of growth, if you look at the year, we expected it's actually playing out quite as we had expected, which is we thought that we'd have a pretty modest growth scenario in the first half, and then we'd pick up in the second half of the year. So we grew at 2% in the first half, and now we saw 6% in the third quarter. So quite a notable inflection up in the growth rate here in the third quarter. And we revised our guidance for the year to 3 to 4%. So we're tracking to that year to date. In terms of what's going on, certainly the biggest factor that we've seen, which again was what we'd predicted, was in the consumer electronics space. We saw negative growth in the first half, and we saw a pickup now in the third quarter, which is around new product spec-ins, which were then, in preparation for new product launches, as well as the seasonal effect that we see in consumer electronics. So that helped our growth rate in the third quarter after negative growth in the first half. The other areas of the business, if you look at the company, we've seen nice growth and very steady in consumer business through the year. We're growing a little over 3%. We've seen good and steady growth in the healthcare segment, which we were encouraged. We saw the growth, I think it was a little over 6% in the third quarter, which was a little bit of an increase in the healthcare space. So that's been steady through the year. And then I think importantly for us, the industrial performance improved notably in the third quarter to 6% growth. And that was quite broad-based. That if you look at our businesses, industrial adhesives and tapes, automotive, abrasives, the personal safety business, we saw improving growth rates here recently. And if you look at it geographically, we also saw for all of our businesses, the improving growth that we're seeing was quite broad. The U.S., we grew at almost 5% in the third quarter, which was increasing from where we'd been. Western Europe turned more positive, Asia. So it was pretty broad-based.
Yeah. And if I think about you guys regionally, it seems like a lot of growth is coming from LATAM's been great. All year,
right.
You had double-digit organic growth this quarter.
Mm-hmm.
We just visited China last week,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like this transition to a consumer-oriented economy is also going to benefit some of your segments, particularly
right.
the safety and graphics area, and also the consumer area.
Right.
So maybe talk us through a little bit about how you're going to market mm-hmm. in emerging markets and the opportunity that you see there over the next
year. No, it's a good question. So if you look at the business model for 3M, first of all, today we have 35% of our sales globally are in developing markets, which is an increase over the last decade from about 20% 10 years ago. And we expect by the end of the five-year period that our developing market sales will represent about 42% or more of the company's sales. So we see very nice and continuous growth in the developing markets. If you look at how we approach the presence and investment in developing markets, it tends to follow a fairly well established pattern, which is we enter in early stages of development with our product portfolio that's most specifically tailored towards infrastructure build-out. So if you think about road signage as they build out the roads. If you think about the communications networks where we sell into the utilities, if you think about areas of infrastructure, we tend to start there. As the economies then evolve and mature, we enter more strongly with our industrial segments, as the manufacturing economy builds out, and in some countries, electronics. And then in the later stages of development of these markets, we then build on top of that existing business. We'll build out our consumer and our healthcare business. And so if you look where we are, it varies by country right now, but we're seeing very nice growth in a number of the markets. You mentioned Latin America, which is our most mature of the emerging markets because we've been there for now 70 years. We have a portfolio which reflects very similarly to 3M's overall global portfolio. Whereas if you look at some of the other areas of the world where it's earlier stages of development, like Central Eastern Europe, Middle East Africa, emerging Asia, we're just now building out in some of the latter stages, the consumer and healthcare business. And as you were saying, as the economies now start to focus and develop their economies for domestic consumption, we're in a very nice position to be able to take advantage of that. So, for example, our consumer and healthcare businesses have been growing now over the last couple of years very consistently in developing markets, in the double-digit range, and we expect that to continue.
How much of it, if your go-to-market strategy is having a manufacturing presence, R&D,
Right.
sales strategy, local sourcing?
Yep.
And do you need all of those specific capabilities to be successful in the markets that you're,
Right.
you know, for lack of a better term, planting seeds in?
Yeah, no, it's good. So in the case of our model for development, as I've just described it, the way we also evolve that model is we normally enter the markets where we're developing our presence, and it's primarily on a sales basis where we're importing the products that we're selling in those markets. And then also following the evolution, we'll enter those markets, and our intention is to develop our presence locally for consumption locally. So we don't enter with large production bases that are intended to be an export source for the world, but rather we're building a local business for local participation. And so we initially start with products which are imported, so we'll do very little manufacturing in the early stages of development. And then what happens is, as we build out our presence and create critical mass in those countries, we will then start to localize at a later stage production. So we'll build small production, and then it'll turn into more sophisticated depending on the size. So if we get enough critical mass, we can justify putting in more capable production activities. And then in 35 countries around the world, we also have an R&D footprint because our model works best when we have local manufacturing and local R&D, where we can then start to tailor the offerings in those markets to the local market requirements. So it's, again, an evolution where frankly, it's a patient model. It requires you to establish early in these countries and then build patiently because it's one that's a gradual model of investment and growth. But by the time you get to later stages, you have a very well-established local business with good capability that tends to be very sustainable, and it's been repeated in many countries around the world. It's also a model that inevitably is successful. So, and we see a lot of legs on the model because there's still places like Africa, like some of the areas in Asia where we are just now establishing a presence.
Any specific countries?
We have 7 countries in Africa we've targeted to establish a presence right now, and we're also looking at some of the places in Southeast Asia, like Myanmar, like Mongolia, where we don't have a significant presence yet.
Turning to the, that was helpful, caller, but turning to Europe. little bit more developed markets.
Right.
You've got high exposure across your healthcare segment, your industrial segment. Safety and graphics, I think, has pretty high exposure there as well.
Right.
Help us understand what's happening in Europe and whether you're starting to see whether there are leading indicators to those segments that are starting to turn.
Yeah. So if you look at, first of all, our presence in Western Europe, we have about 17% of the company's sales, or $5 billion, are in Western Europe. As you pointed to, Joe, we have a broad presence of all of our businesses, but certainly we have significant activities, including in healthcare and the industrial, in the safety as well. And what we saw was a period now for about a year and a half where we were seeing negative growth in Europe that did turn slightly positive in the second quarter, and we saw an improvement now to 3% top-line growth in the third quarter in Western Europe. And the source of that improving, well, if you look then at the sectors, we've seen healthcare has been pretty steady and positive throughout the entire period. So we've seen growth in the healthcare business, modest but positive. Probably the more significant improvements that we've seen most recently were in two areas. One is we did see quite broadly our industrial businesses improving in Europe here as we entered the second half. So automotive improved, the aerospace business, and then some of the other industrial businesses like industrial adhesives and tapes and abrasives, which feed into general industry. We saw improvement. Personal safety, which is around a business that sells into factories where you have worker safety. So that did improve, which we take as a positive sign in terms of the bottoming that's occurred in Western Europe. And I would say the other factor that I would call out is if you look in the second quarter, we were able to turn positive in our growth overall based on some improvement in Northern Europe. In the third quarter, we actually saw our Southern European business turn positive for the first time since the beginning of 2011. So we're seeing some positive signs developing a little bit more broadly across the region.
Interesting. So based on what you see today, would it surprise you if you don't grow at least low single digits in Europe next year?
I think we should, yeah, barring any change in the trajectory of the economies, it would be my view that we should be able to continue to deliver positive growth in Western Europe.
Okay. Turning a little bit to the margin story. So the growth story has been great this year.
Right.
During the quarter, we talked about executing the playbook and the playbook, which consists of getting the growth, not necessarily growing margins. And so help us understand the trajectory as growth continues to improve.
Sure.
If growth does improve, how should we be thinking about your incremental margins on a go-forward basis? Because right now they're essentially at where your margin profile is.
Yeah. So if you look at our margins, we've been operating at a 22% operating margin for the company here this year, which is in the zone that the company has operated now for about a decade. And we think is a very sustainable level of profitability for the company. And as we think about that equation, what we're always seeking to do is to continue to invest for the long-term health and growth of the company while continuing to deliver premier margins and returns on capital. So we look, as we move forward, at all of those elements of the model and continue to look to invest as we create additional growth. And we typically have, on incremental organic growth, we typically generate 30%-40% operating leverage. And so in the current period with stable margins, you can think about the fact that we've been reinvesting that increment towards supporting the health of the company. So areas like we're rolling out a global ERP system, which is a seven-year project that is absorbing additional investment that we're putting in. Secondly, we made a decision to increase the amount of investment that we're making and pointed at disruptive new technology development. So we had some increases this year, which is being funded by the leverage we're getting off of incremental growth. And then a third area, an example of the types of incremental investments we're making, is we're centralizing our supply chain management in Western Europe, and that is now requiring some incremental investment, which we saw in the third quarter. So all of those pointed at improving the long-term health of the business while continuing to deliver premium returns on the results of the company.
That's helpful. As we think through to 2014, the incremental spending on the ERP investment is roughly $50 million.
Right.
R&D right now, I think, is shaking out about 5.5% for the year.
Yeah.
With the goal of taking it to 6%.
Correct.
My assumption is about 10 basis points a year. Correct me if I'm wrong on that assumption. And then the third piece, which you said, was the supply chain component in Europe. So how do I think about the additional costs that you're taking on?
Sure.
And at what point do you get back to the potential for 30%+ incremental margins in that business?
So if I think forward, we'll provide guidance for 2014 here in December, but some of the factors that will feature as we have that presentation, certainly we'll continue to invest to grow the business. We're constructive on 2014, and certainly the growth that we're now experiencing would tend to portend positively for future performance, and we will continue to invest. So as you correctly called out, the ERP system, we expect to have peak investment in that seven-year project will occur next year, which will be about a $50 million increase in terms of the year-over-year expenses that we'll absorb. We have a goal to move our R&D spend as a percent of revenue up to 6% by 2017. And while it's not exactly linear, I think it would be fair to assume we'll incrementally invest in that area next year. The European supply chain project is now in place, so we won't see incremental, at least the third quarter. I guess in the first half of the year, there might be some increment there, but we'll also be seeing benefits that we'll start to see from that investment next year. So we have a number of projects. We have some other things that will impact our results next year, one of which is our pension expense. We do expect to decline again next year with rising interest rates and having a very well-funded plan. We've indicated we think that there will be $100 million or more of expense reduction next year. So there are some pluses and minuses that we can expect.
It sounds like, if I'm extrapolating this correctly, though, that the pension piece,
Right.
the R&D piece, the ERP piece, and maybe some supply chain costs in the first half of the year, they tend to wash out. And so when you think through the incremental EPS growth for next year, it's really going to be based on organic growth and the kind of incremental margins you can get on that growth, and then also what you're doing either below the line or with buyback. And so I guess my question is on the buyback side.
Sure.
Big step up in buyback this year. You know, any initial thoughts on the buyback as we look out into 2014?
Yeah. So if you look at the net shares and the buyback activity, it is true this year, as we've gone through the year, we have increased the amount of buyback that we've done. And if I were to provide a little frame around that. So last year, in November, when we announced our five-year plan for the company, we did indicate that we expected to buy, to have $7.5 billion-$15 billion of buyback during the next 5 years, which would be upwards to 2% annual reduction in our net share count outstanding. As we entered this year, then, we continuously update and look at capital allocation and deployment of capital. And first and foremost, we were satisfied that we're adequately investing in the business so that we can, as we've already talked about, meet the long-term goals of the company. We looked at the trajectory for growth and cash flow generation, and we feel quite good about that right now. We also observed with rising interest rates that our pension-funded status has improved substantially, and we expect that will be less of a call on capital going forward. And we also observed that we believe our balance sheet is adequately funded, and we don't see any reason to further strengthen the balance sheet. So that in combination with the decision we made to run our U.S. business with a minimum level of cash, whereas we would, if you look as recently as a year ago, we had about $2 billion of cash on the U.S. balance sheet. We've decided to take that down to operate very close to zero. All of that led us to conclude that it would be appropriate for us to increase the amount of share repurchase this year. So we've indicated we'll do in the range of $4.5 to $5 billion this year, and we've done $3.5 billion thus far. Going forward, we'll certainly take a look. We've been doing work, as we always do, to refresh our view of the right capital structure and capital allocation for the company, and we'll provide an update on our thinking on that here in the December meeting.
Okay, sounds good. From a price cost perspective, you're continuing to invest in R&D. How should we think about the sustainability of the pricing tailwind that you have this year, and how much of it is coming from investing in new products that you can get pricing power in versus investing in products that could potentially go obsolete?
So we think a very powerful supporter of the company's margins is the significant amount of funds that we invest in innovation and R&D. So if you look this year, 33% of our sales will be products that were launched within the last 5 years. And we think there's a very strong and positive correlation between the product portfolio health and the ability to command price and provide value to our customers in the market. So very strong relationship there. We have been raising our commitment to R&D, as we've already talked about, and we've seen the share of our sales have been increasing in terms of the new product vitality, and we think that will continue upward from here. And so, we think that, we don't have a precise formula, but clearly there's a positive relationship between the health of our portfolio and our ability to provide value and gain price in the market.
At this point, I'll open it up for questions from the audience in case there's anybody that likes to ask a question. Otherwise, I can continue. I'll continue. So we touched on capital allocation for a minute. Help me understand how you're thinking about investing in internal capacity, R&D, mm-hmm. versus potential M&A versus the buyback. Like what is influencing your decisions today?
Yeah, so if you look at the business model, first of all, the good news for us is we generate very stable and strong cash flow from the operations, so we're in a position to be able to fund across that whole spectrum of choices, which is very important to our sustainability. First and foremost for us, we're essentially, at our core, we're an organic innovation company. So first and foremost, we look to reinvest in our own capabilities for R&D inside of the company, which we're doing and increasing modestly. Capital expenditure, the company's model, we're quite a vertically integrated business model. And the reason for that is much of our intellectual property is actually encapsulated in manufacturing process technology, differentiated technologies we use to produce our products in the factories. and therefore it's important for us strategically to do that activity internal to 3M because we have a lot of trade secrets that mean that to protect those trade secrets, we need to be producing in vertically integrated supply chains. So our capital investment tends to be towards the high end of peer comparators. And I would expect our capital. We've been investing around 4.5%-5% of revenue in capital expenditures in recent years, and I expect that'll continue at that level. So first and foremost, internally, we'll prioritize strongly to opportunities we see to continue to do that. What also features in the business model are acquisitions. We think there's an important place in the model for acquiring businesses that we continue to look for. And why do we do that? Inevitably, in our model, we have 46 technology platforms, and our model is really built on combining those technologies into novel solutions that other companies are unable to replicate. So we see from time to time in looking outside of our existing portfolio opportunities to acquire businesses that can add to our technology portfolio and capability, which then we can start connecting those technologies that we acquire with the existing capabilities. So if you look at the Ceradyne acquisition we did last year in the ceramic space, it's a good case study of that strategy. If you then look beyond from an acquisition perspective, sometimes we use acquisitions to establish a presence in a local market for our consumer business where there might be an established local brand that can help us to jumpstart our presence and build out our consumer business. So that's not atypical. From time to time, we'll be interested in some capacity or other distribution capability. So bottom line is for us, we think that acquisitions are relevant to 3M's model, and we have some very strong businesses today, like our dental business, which was initiated as part of an acquisition some decades ago. So we'll continue to deploy there. You haven't seen us acquire this year, and it's not because, well, we have a very healthy pipeline of prospects. We encourage all of our businesses to be looking for opportunities to fill strategic gaps, and the opportunities tend to be lumpy. So it's a little less predictable, and in the current market, we haven't seen opportunities which we could close on that we felt would generate a good return for 3M shareholders. So we haven't done anything yet this year. And then finally, but again, going back to we have the financial wherewithal when we see opportunities. We don't have to trade off between those uses of funds. We're able to fund across the different opportunities we have. And then finally, deploying returns to shareholders. Again, we've returned 90% plus of our net income to shareholders over the last decade through buybacks and dividends. Our dividend, we've increased 55 years consecutively, and we expect to continue to increase our dividend. We indicated last year that would rise with earnings growth, and likewise, the buyback, as we've already discussed, we've been pretty steadily buying back shares and increased that somewhat this year.
On M&A, how much of a constraint is pricing?
I would say in today's market, it's been more difficult to find transactions. Like a lot of asset prices, multiples are high right now. So it has been. We've seen interesting possibilities that we haven't closed on in part because of price.
Makes sense. And you mentioned Ceradyne, and I thought that the commentary around the quarter with nine different divisions leveraging the technology was interesting, and that was always part of the case to buy Ceradyne.
Right.
At what point do you actually start to see results from the technology?
Yeah. So if you look at Ceradyne, and just to walk through that briefly, so 3M, one of our our technology, one of our 46 technologies has been ceramics. So we have a very significant business in the ceramic space. But our expertise has been in around ceramics that are produced in a manufacturing process where the materials are in a soluble, in a liquid form. And there's another area of the ceramics space, which is where the processes are ceramic materials that are formed in a solid basis during the process. So Ceradyne was an expert in that area, and we were able to acquire them, and now we're integrating. And as you pointed out, we've got nine divisions out of our 31 selling divisions that are doing projects where they've identified applications in their business. So that includes, importantly, our industrial businesses are doing projects. Our healthcare business has some projects, and we were actually already a customer in healthcare in our dental business from Ceradyne before we acquired them. Our safety and graphics business as well has some projects. So we're seeing, and we see some opportunities in the electronics and energy space. So we see connectivity going on. There are actually 23 projects in those nine divisions that are going on right now. And in terms of launch, I believe there are some projects that may start coming out of the labs as soon as next year.
I know we don't have your outlook yet for 2014. We'll get it.
In December.
In December. As you think about your different businesses and areas for outgrowth, whatever the number turns out to be, whether it's 4%, 5%, 3%, whatever the number is, which businesses do you expect to outgrow next year versus potentially undergrow the average for the company?
Next year, I guess there wouldn't be any business that I would call out either on the extreme end of the scale right now. If we look at the trends in our businesses, we've been very encouraged by sort of the steady improvement we've seen pretty broadly across the portfolio. Obviously, the one where we've seen some ups and downs is in the electronics and energy business, but we've seen improvement in the third quarter. We're cautious about the fourth quarter performance in the electronics space depending on end market pull-through. But as I think about 2014, I would say I don't have any reason to call out one or another of those businesses as having performance and growth that would be varying from their longer-term averages.
On electronics specifically, we've been hearing some snippets about pricing eroding and even mix being an issue with some of your international competitors. Are you seeing that as well? Is that a potential headwind in 2014?
I would say in the case of consumer electronics, that by design is a price-down type of a business. So we operate the business, which typically for us operates around the average profit margin of the company, despite the fact that in some of those sectors of the business, you can have upwards to double-digit annual price decline. So the way you need to manage that business, which we've done successfully now for many years, is plan for price-down in your business plans and innovate in both the product and the manufacturing space to be able to accompany that price-down with cost reductions while still getting an acceptable return. So if I look into next year and beyond, I don't see any reason why that would change.
That makes sense. Again, opening it up to the audience. Any questions from the audience? Got one right there.
Hi. I was just wondering, you mentioned that you're not looking to strengthen your balance sheet going forward, but I guess I was kind of wondering, are you looking at maybe using your balance sheet, leveraging it a bit more, just given how low levered you are compared to peers with your AA ratings? And if you were to do that, I mean, do you have uses for those funds or kind of your outlook on that?
Sure. Yeah. So if you look at the 3M business model first to kind of frame the way we think of it, the business model has been very successful over many decades with a combination where on the business operating side, we're happy to take a lot of risk in terms of continuously reinventing the business. So if you look at our business, we're continuously inventing new segments and new products and new combinations of technologies such that, from a traditional business planning perspective, it's a little bit different in 3M in that we know we're going to invent our way to a new future, but we don't always know exactly what that is. So when I say taking risk in the business model, we do that. Secondly, it's a very intensive investment business in terms of capital and R&D, and it's important for us in the model to be able to continuously fund those investments through all stages of the economic cycle. So pairing very well with that model has been maintaining a strong capital structure through time, which is something that's worked very well for the company. At the same time, it's my responsibility to continuously question whether that model is right or should we be rebalancing in that in some fashion. And so, as we've talked about today, as we looked at it through this year, and as we talked about our capital structure and capital allocation when we rolled out our five-year plan last year, we did announce some modifications to our thinking. So we said we would be reducing the share count by 2% annually versus what we'd been doing around 1%. We looked at other demands on capital, like our pension funding. We could see the requirements were declining. We upped the commitment to dividend increases to accompany growth in earnings, whereas we had been raising dividends in the prior period somewhere between inflation and earnings growth. So we made some adjustments. We continue to look at what is the right capital structure and capital allocation for the company, and we'll have an update here again in December on how we're thinking about that.
Probably have time for one more question. I guess I'll close. Two-part question. So as part of your five-year plan, you talked about portfolio rebalancing. You've made a few divestitures.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that are we done with portfolio trimming, or are you looking to improve those businesses that remain within your portfolio?
Right.
And then the second question is around your segment realignment that you did last year and whether you're starting to see some of the benefits of doing that realignment.
Sure. Okay. So yeah, so I guess just briefly on the second question. So we realigned from six sectors to five last year, five business groups, and the intent of that was to really make sure that we were effectively aligned with our customer profiles. So the biggest change we made is we consolidated some businesses that were calling on the electronics sector, and we consolidated them into the single energy and electronics group. And we made some other changes, but we're seeing that's had a very positive impact for us as we've made it simpler for our customers to do business with us, and they're certainly identifying that that's important and that's been helpful to them. So we're seeing benefits of that realignment already, and we think there's some more opportunity beyond that. In terms of the portfolio management, yes, so last year we provided some visibility on how Inge and I aligned our thinking around portfolio management, where we classified our divisions into different categories. Those would be five of our divisions, which is about a third of the company. We categorized as Heartland, which are large, well-established, very profitable franchise businesses. So think of abrasives and industrial adhesives and tape, automotive aftermarket, personal safety, and our electronics market divisions. And we did that because we wanted to signal to the organization, as they allocate resources around the world in the countries where they're operating, that they take into consideration that we believe those are important franchises for the company going forward. We had a second group, which are more earlier stage of development businesses we defined as push forward, where we can see not well established in all of the countries around the world, not always having a fully built-out portfolio, and we classified them as such with the intention to encourage our leadership to support higher growth level for those businesses. And then finally, we had a strategic review category, which are businesses that we felt we needed to make some changes to improve their performance, or consider other alternatives for them. So we've been through, we're towards the back end of a review of all of those businesses and have defined where we're gonna go with each of them. And that's a continuous process, Joe. So we also expect we're also refreshing the portfolio, and there are some classification changes because that's not a one-time event for us, but rather how we intend to run the company going forward.
Great. Well, David, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.